Welcome to this podcast from Adelaide Place Baptist Church. We are a community of disciples, apprentices of Jesus, who live and work in the city of Glasgow, and it's our vision to join God in the renewal of all things. Our discipleship to Jesus is for all of our lives, so as well as listening to this podcast, we'd love for you to join us on a Sunday morning or get involved in one of our missional communities, which are across the city throughout the week. Our prayer is that you encounter Jesus in some way through this podcast. More information can be found at apbc.net.
Good morning, everyone. There was almost a response there. Good morning. Yeah! So for those of you who I haven't had a chance to meet yet, my name is Emma, and I've been part of this community for about 3 years now. And as Fiona's already said, over summer, we've been exploring a little bit of our culture as a church, of thinking about the kind of values that we want to live by and the kind of people that we want to be. I am always hungry. I'm sure that's not going to be a new fact for most of you. I'm always thinking about the next meal, and my holidays are planned entirely around food. Earlier this week, I celebrated my birthday in what has become the traditional fashion by eating out for every meal of the day. I finally got to try that bacon naan at Disham. It was worth the wait, by the way. When I first came to Adelaide Place a few years ago, I remember how it felt to be welcomed into this community. You walked across the room to say hello to me. When I came back the next week, you remembered who I was and what we talked about. You really listened to me. You introduced me to other people. One couple, Rowan and Sam, invited me round for dinner really early on in my time here. So all this is to say that when we talk about our culture, it might feel like we're asking you to be and do more. And yeah, there'll be a little bit of that. But we're starting from this place of recognizing all the ways that we already do this, all the ways that we already invite people into community. You already walk across the room. You already invite people out for coffee. You already have them round into your house. We talk about them and we keep talking about our culture because it's important to help us remember them, because we're pretty forgetful. I'm pretty forgetful. So we keep talking about them to remind ourselves of why we believe in them and why we want to put them into practice. But we start from this place of gratitude, from a place of celebrating all the ways that we already see a culture of invitation at work in our community. We're going to look at a parable told in Luke's Gospel about a great feast. And if you want to read along and look it up, you can find it in Luke 14, verses 15 to 24. But it'll also come up on the screen, or you can just listen along to it as I read. We're picking up the story partway through a dinner party that Jesus was attending. So we've already started thinking a little bit about who we'd invite to our dinner parties. This is a party that Jesus was attending at the home of a Pharisee or a teacher of the law. So let's jump in at Luke 14, verse 15. When one of those who reclined at the table with him heard these things, he said to him, "Blessed is everyone who will eat bread in the kingdom of God." But he said to him, the he being Jesus, "A man once gave a great banquet and invited many. And at the time for the banquet, he sent his servants to say to those who had been invited, 'Come, for everything is now ready.' But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said to him, 'I have bought a field and I must go out and see it. Please have me excused.' And another said, 'I have bought 5 yoke of oxen and I go to examine them. Please have me excused.' And another said, 'I have married a wife and therefore I cannot come.' So the servant came and reported these things to his master. Then the master of the house became angry and said to his servant, 'Go out quickly to the streets and lanes of the city and bring in the poor and the crippled and the blind and the lame.' And the servant said, 'Sir, what you have commanded has been done, and still there is room.' And the master said to the servant, Go out to the highways and hedges and compel people to come in, that my house may be filled. For I tell you, none of those men who were invited shall taste my banquet." So we've had lots of weddings in our community lately. We had, most recently, we had Lindsay and Andy's wedding. I love a good wedding. I love getting all dressed up and celebrating as I watch the people I love commit themselves publicly to each other. I love that moment when a bride first steps through the church doors. All eyes are on her, but I've turned around to look at the groom as he catches his first glimpse of his bride on his wedding day. I love the stories and the laughter that gets shared throughout the day. And I love crawling into bed a little bit bruised and battered after a raucous ceilidh at the end of the day. But before we get to that point, before we get to the celebrations and the laughter and the tears, we have to be invited. We have to receive a save the date card from the bride and groom and get it in our calendar. Then a little bit closer to the wedding day, we'll get a full wedding invitation in the post. It's normally printed on some kind of fancy card, and it gives you all the details that you need. Details about where the ceremony is, what time it's at, and how to RSVP. We have to respond to the invitation. We have to send back an RSVP and let the bride and groom know that we're planning to attend. We want to make sure they have enough cake and wine for us. I did tell you I was always hungry. So we don't just put it in our calendar and then forget about it. The invitation demands a reply. We see this in Luke's story too. The invitation doesn't start with us. We are invited by God into his great feast. He initiates it and we respond. So before we think about all the nuts and bolts of the parable, let's just step back for a moment and think about and notice what this tells us about God. The feast begins with the host sending out the invitations. It begins with God inviting us to his table. This right here is who our God is. This is what he does. Our God is generous. He's extravagant. He's outrageously generous. The table is overflowing and our cup is never empty at his table. His love and his mercy have no bounds. He invites us into relationship with him. He wants us at the table with him. This is who our God is. In the parable, we see these mixed responses from the invited guests. All three of them offer excuses that, when you dig a little bit deeper, reveal themselves to just be absurd and insulting. "I have bought a field and I must go see it. I didn't buy my house without going to look at it first. I have bought 5 yoke of oxen and I must go examine them. Please have me excused. You know, I grew up on a farm and my dad doesn't buy tractors or machinery without trying them out first." The last guy, he doesn't even apologize and he says something that's quite risque, actually. "I have married a wife." Feel free to read between the lines there. So their excuses, they offer these excuses that are just insulting to the host. They've already saved the date, but when the second invitation comes or when the full wedding invitation comes in the post, they reject him. They sever the relationship, which is the opposite of what meals together are supposed to do. So we have to start with our own responses. Do we say yes to meeting up and then back out for no reason? Do we say no to the lunch invitations because we just can't be bothered? Are we severing relationships with the people around us? And how do we respond to the invitation of God? Do I make excuses when God says, "Come"? "I don't have time to read my Bible, but I've binge-watched Madam Secretary on Prime this week. I don't have money to give to charity, but I stop at Starbucks on my way to work every morning. I can't come to your birthday party because I'm filing my tax return, but I've played 5 hours of Candy Crush Saga today." What shallow excuses do we offer God when we turn down his invitation? For those of you who have been married or have got married recently or are planning a wedding, I'm told that one of the most stressful things that a bride and groom will do is plan the guest list. You'll likely have different groups of friends, you'll have different colleagues, you'll have parents and in-laws who want to invite people who are important to them. So couples take a long time getting the guest list just right, and then they send out the invitations to those specific people. And it's the same in this parable. The host doesn't just fire out a quick Facebook invitation to all his friends. He carefully selects the people he wants to come and then invites them personally. When I have friends round for dinner, I do the same thing. I don't often have an open invitation. I think about the three or four people that I'd like to spend time with and then invite them round. So much like me, it's probable that the host in our parable here invited people who were like him, people who could invite him back. Our cultures aren't so dissimilar that we can't identify with this idea of reciprocity. They invited me round for dinner, now I need to invite them round for dinner. They brought me chocolates, so now I need to take them flowers. The original invitation in the parable was extended to people who were in the host's circle of friends. I wonder, are we like that? Do we only invite people who are like us? Am I only willing to reach out to certain people and not to others? After the host hears that all his invited guests have turned him down and insulted him and aren't coming, we might expect him to cancel or postpone the dinner party. That might be what we do. But that's not what happens in the story. We hear him tell his servant to go out quickly. This is the most challenging part of the story for me. The feast won't be wasted. We just won't be at it. We might be unwilling to accept the invitation, but the feast still goes on. The kingdom still comes. People still get healed. New music is birthed. Creativity is unleashed. Friendships are deepened. The feast won't be wasted. We just won't be there. A man once gave a great banquet and invited many. This is no small dinner party. It's a lavish feast. The host has prepared a party and he's not going to waste it. So the host decides to carry on and he invites anyone who wants to come in, regardless of whether they can reciprocate his invitation or not. He chooses to go out to the margins, to go to the streets and the highways and the byways and invite in the people that society has excluded or deemed unworthy. You know, again, we see this host whose invitation is expansive and generous. This is who our God is. This is what he does. His table is for everyone. I wonder, who do we exclude or deem not worthy of a seat at the table? Later in the story, we hear the servant report, still there is room. Have a look around you here. We've still got room. Maybe not downstairs today, but there's lots of space upstairs. Who are those empty seats for? Who might we invite into one of them? Who might you invite out to lunch? Who might I invite into friendship? So the feast was lavish. It was this generous and full feast. And lavish feasts cost. It would have cost the host a lot of time and money. A number of years ago, I started hosting a Thanksgiving dinner in November. The first year I did this, I spent weeks thinking about the menu, which, to be fair, is not uncommon for me. But I spent more time than normal thinking about the menu and deciding who to invite, shopping for the ingredients, cooking, setting the table, making sure that everything was just right for it. I spent a month's budget on that one meal. There was a cost involved to it, but the joy of sitting around the table that night, laughing with my friends, polishing off the last dregs of the coffee pot and picking at pecan pie, that was sheer gift. It was worth it. You might be wondering why I start up this tradition, given that I'm quite clearly not North American. Why buy into a tradition that's not my own? There's a practical cost of time and money to hosting Thanksgiving, for sure, but there's also an emotional cost. When I was 17, a friend of mine died by suicide that November. It rocked my community. We really struggled to make sense of it and struggled to figure out how to move forward together. Later, when I was 21, another friend of mine died by suicide in that same month in November. So November for me is a difficult month. November reminds me of them, and remembering them is sad. It brings sadness. I feel sad for all the life that they missed out on, and sad for how our lives are poorer without them in it. Thanksgiving gave me a way to push back against the sadness, to consciously choose to cultivate gratitude and joy rather than sadness. It costs, especially those first few years, it cost a lot to do that. But Thanksgiving became a ritual for me. It became a way to say that even in the midst of pain, it's possible to find joy. If we want to invite people into God's feast, we must be prepared to incur some costs. Are we willing to be disrupted, to have our comfort disturbed? Because when everyone is invited to this table, there's going to be disruption. When English is not your native language, do we make time to go slower and make sure that we understand each other? When you come from a culture with different values to the UK, how do we bridge that gap in expectations and cultural norms? When new people are visiting our church, are we willing to leave our friends and walk across the room to say hello? When we have more kids as part of our community, are we willing to give up some of our neat and tidy and quiet expectations of church to make space for them? In my missional community, we've had people from many different backgrounds be a part of it. We've had Americans, Irish, Scottish, Malawian, English. It can be a challenge at times to find a common ground and to find an easy way of interacting with each other. But I love it. There is no better place than the church to practice making room for people who are different to us. In fact, the early church, hospitality was one of the defining characteristics. The welcome and invitation that the early church displayed was so different to the culture around them that it became the thing that they were known for. Maybe that all sounds like hard work to you. You know, I said at the start that we talk about culture not just to ask you to do more, but to remind ourselves of why we do these things, why we want to put them into practice. The invitation to the feast, the invitation to the table of God, is an invitation to joy. Yeah, it will be hard work at times, but this is where the life is. This is where we see the kingdom breaking through, where we see lives being restored and we see transformation coming to our city. All through the Bible, we see references to God's wedding feast at the end of the time. If we really mean it when we say that we want to join with God in the renewal of all things, like we've said in this nice pretty vision Zion with all our cultures on it, then one of the ways that we do that is by inviting other people to the table. We can present the table as a place of shame. We can present it as a place where rules are made and punishments are handed out. Or we can present it as a place of great joy, where we are invited into relationship with each other and with God. Don't we want more of that? Don't we want to taste more of the kingdom? Don't we want to see more people being discipled, more creativity unleashed, more people experiencing the goodness of life with Jesus? Maybe you're still thinking, aye, but that still sounds like flipping hard work. It doesn't feel like joy. I hear you, and honestly, I'm right there with you. It is tough, and we welcome that realism here. We don't want to gloss over that or ignore it and pretend that it doesn't exist. But I wonder if there might be an invitation for us today. I wonder if the invitation might be to embrace disruption and make room for others at the table, to discipline ourselves into a new way of thinking and acting. It might take discipline to make us walk across the room and talk to someone that we don't know. I am a raging introvert, so I never want to do that. It might take discipline to make us speak out in a group that's new to us. Sometimes we do just have to grit our teeth and make ourselves do something that we don't especially want to. But could that discipline lead us into a new level of delight? Is it possible that in schooling ourselves in this new way of behaving, that we might discover new levels of joy and life, a joy deeper than any that we have experienced before? I don't know about you, but I think that would be worth it. Let's pray together as the band come back up. God, I thank you that you are the God who invites, that this all starts with you, that it's from you and for you. I thank you that you invite us to your table, that we get to come and be a part of this. So God, would you remind us that you want us to be at the table with you? Would you remind us that there is room for everyone at your table?
This is not a table for the proud, for the sordid, for the smug, nor a banquet for the strong, for the self-reliant, or the perfect. This is not a feast for ones who by their own efforts succeed at this world's game. This table is not for the likes of them, for by their own declaration they proclaim themselves as those who do not need to feast here. This table is not for the strong, but for those of us who are weak, for those of us who struggle daily to submit, who feel the pain of suffering and know the disappointment of loss. For those of us who envy and fall short, who full of malice, slander, hypocrisy, and deceit look upon our sin and weep, who hunger after righteousness and thirst for the presence of the one who wept and bled for us. For us there is bread to share and wine to drink. For us there is forgiveness to receive and new promises to hear. For us, this table groans under the weight of his mercy and reminds us of his grace poured out in abundance. For us, this table awaits. This table is for those who know they are weak. Come and receive the bread, broken as he was for you. Come and receive the wine poured out as he was for you. Come and feast, for we will be a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, and we will declare the praises of him who called us out of darkness and into his wonderful light.
Every week over summer, we've been inviting each other to gather around this table, to share a meal together and remind ourselves of Jesus. We've thought a lot about invitation out there, but this is also about invitation in here, about invitation in our church family and in ourselves. How often do we find it hard to believe that we have been invited to the table? That we are welcomed? Maybe you need to hear that invitation for yourself afresh today. Because the invitation to the table is an invitation to draw near. It's a place of grace and joy and mercy. It's an invitation into relationship and into community. For some of us, the invitation is to begin by welcoming ourselves. At the table, we find a safe place to see and accept our own needs and fears and weaknesses, our hunger. For others of us, the invitation is to embrace that disruption and look for ways to make room for other people in our homes, in our community, in our workplaces. If you hear Jesus' invitation this morning, there's a place at this table for you. If you are hungry for Jesus, there's space here for you. So when we're tempted to make excuses, may we be reminded of the deep joy that comes when we welcome others at the table. And when you're tempted to exclude yourself from the table of God, may you look again at the generous, extravagant, abundant welcome of our God. This is who our God is. So when you're ready, would you come up and receive the bread and wine at the table? It might take a little longer, but we're going to come to the table together this morning.